TV right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for talking to us, Mona. And we're going to get, we'll get you back in a week or two and get caught up on some more shows.
All right. Great to see you.
Okay, good.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, geez. How do I turn it off?
I don't know.
Oh, there it is. I got it. Thanks again, Mona. And thank you for listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland. But have no fear. Film at 11 will be back next Friday. So until then, keep watching the screens.
FM. If you're able, please go to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution in support of the critical work of community radio. Thank you.
Plugged In on KBOO is a radio show dedicated to underground electronic music. The show is hosted by DJ Tronic and features deep house, tech house, techno, drum and bass, breakbeats, future bass, down tempo, and more. Plugged In frequently has local producers and DJs on the show, and we provide info about upcoming events in Portland, including free ticket giveaways. Plugged In airs the first and third Friday of every month from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. Pacific time.
Listening to Let's Talk. Let's Talk is a digital space for students at PCC experiencing disabilities to share their perspectives, ideas, and worldviews in an inclusive and accessible environment. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions or positions of Portland Community College, PCC Foundation, or KBOO FM. We broadcast bi-weekly on our home website, pcc.edu/DCA, on Spotify, and monthly on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM. Thank you for tuning in to this special edition of the Let's Talk podcast. Today we have two episodes for you, back-to-back, addressing disabled perspectives on sports and athletic activity. Take it away, Michelle.
Good morning. My name's Michelle, and I work with the Let's Talk podcast at PCC. And this past weekend, I went and watched Miguel, Nick, and Elias at the Columbia River Triathlon.
My name's Nick. I've been an athlete with Northwest Association for Blind Athletes for about 6 months now. Last weekend was my first triathlon I ever did.
Wow, that's really cool.
My name is Elias. I only recently joined up with NWABA in, I think, April of this year. I'd always known about them, and this was also my first triathlon that I've ever done. Although I did do sprint version, the duathlon, no swimming for me.
Hi, everybody. My name is Miguel, and I am one of the podcast tech here at PCC, along with Michelle. And I have been with Northwest Association for Blind Athletes since 2018, but this was my second triathlon. I did one last year in 2023, and this was my second time doing this event, and it was a lot of fun.
You all participated in the what's called a sprint triathlon. Does anyone want to talk about what that is?
Sure. The triathlon was a 0.5 mile swim, 12 mile bike ride, and a 3.1 mile jog / walk. That was the distance that we had to do. I think it was similar for the duathlon, but they just did the bike and the running aspect of it.
Thanks for explaining that. How long did you train for this event, if you did any training?
Nuwama had some events in the last couple of months that we attended to do some of the practice. In July, we did a lot of the practices, but for me, I didn't train as hard. So last year, I felt much more prepared than I did this year. Last year, I trained for about 3 or 4 months before I even started. This year was much more later, but the thing that most important that I learned was just to get it done. So my goal next year is to train much more often, probably starting now. Nick, Elias, what about you guys?
So yes, I will say that Nuwaba had a few events leading up to this, which trained us for the specific things we would be doing, like biking and running, although I don't think we did any swimming events to prepare for this, at least leading up to it. I trained pretty hard outside of there because they can only have so many events. A lot of it was left up to us to try to get in good enough place for a challenger, especially when it comes to endurance, because that's something you have to keep up. And so I did a lot of running on a treadmill because finding partners to run with is a little bit hard. That's the majority of what I did, and it served me well, especially since I did the duathlon, which was the 5K run, 12-mile bike ride, and then another 5K run. I didn't have to worry too much about the swimming either way.
Training for the triathlon, does eating count? Did a lot of that?
I think it absolutely does. So
yeah, sponsored by Hot Cheetos. Now, the training, I did do a couple swimming things for Nuwaba. Everyone doing the swimming portion of the triathlon had to show them that we could tread water for 2 minutes straight. So I did that. I remember doing that once, and I went to a couple swimming trainings in the pool. I wish I would have done more, or I wish there were more. On my own time, all I did was jog on the treadmill. I did a little stationary bike. That was cool. Just trying to get my muscles acclimated to the transitions, but I didn't realize that the swim was going to take more energy than I assumed, so I ended up walking instead of jogging some.
That's a really good point you bring up, Nick, because like the swimming wore you out, because you had to walk the half mile to swimming area, and then you had to swim, and then trying to get out of the river, your body's just like, what are you doing to me?
Right.
Yeah. For half like the mile. Listeners, we all wore numbers on, we had like a type of bracelet on our left or right side ankle. So when you would walk through the time mats that were placed down by the areas, so the time could start and time could be stopped. But also we had our numbers, like mine was like 1372 on both my arms, and we had them on our calves as well.
Yeah, I think I saw a few athletes run or walk by with their numbers written on their arms and legs. You were swimming downstream, correct?
It was downstream, yeah, but it was super hard because the water kept pushing you to the shallow end instead of to the deeper end. So you had to keep readjusting your swim techniques. Like I basically used for the full swim, 3 different swim techniques just to make sure that I was going to make it across because I was so tired.
Yeah, the swim, we swam downstream. We swam with the current. Miguel brought up the current pulling us to the shore. So it always threw me off guard. I tried to swim in the deep end and then I would end up being pulled to the shore and end up kicking the sand because it was so shallow there. So I had to stand up and then walk myself back out to the deep end and start swimming again. I had to do that so many times.
I think it's pretty awesome that you both were able to like swim for half a mile. That's not an easy feat to do. So good job for the both of you. Also, how was the water? Was it cold?
I don't think the water was that cold, honestly. I anticipated the water to be a lot more cool because it was early in the morning. I think the triathlon started at 8 o'clock in the morning. I just wore board shorts, but I think Miguel had a wetsuit on. There were a few people that had wetsuits on. I wasn't one of them. The water was not that cold.
For me, it just took me a while to get used to the water, but I was fine afterwards. I'm like, oh, I like this. This is refreshing. Having 75-degree water, it was great.
Yeah, I felt like the air temperature felt like humid, but I think it was pretty good racing conditions to start with. I felt like it definitely got hotter into the afternoon. So after swimming, what event did you have next? Elias, you ran first, correct, instead of swam?
I did run first, so there was no swimming for me at all. And I really do commend Miguel and Nick and everybody else who swam for doing it, because it's a full body workout. I can only imagine how draining that was. I love running, so it really wasn't that big of a deal for me. It was just a blast getting it all done.
Yeah, after the swim portion, we just had to transition into a tandem bike riding, because we can't ride a bike by ourselves with the vision loss.
I got to the triathlon right as they blocked the roads. So I was walking in when bikers started going by. I think I saw Elias go by, and I was looking for you, Nick, and also Miguel as well. There were so many people there and running around trying to find like family members or friends to cheer them on. It was a lot of, it was chaotic. It was so fun. The bike ride was, let's see, 12 miles. How did that go for everyone?
The biking portion, I got numb after a while, so I had to stop like once or twice just to stretch. But I did pretty good. That was one of my favorite parts of the race, was doing the biking. It's like really interesting because like with the tandem, you're a bit slower because like everyone else is like running with their cool bikes that are like really light and aerodynamic. Well, the bikes for the tandem bikes are not as fast. And so I wish they would make lighter ones, or ones that were more keep up with like the stamina of the triathlon and bikers. I don't know what you guys think, Elias and Nick, but that was my impression.
I agree with Miguel. The biking portion was definitely it was a breeze for me. But yeah, there was a lot of bikes that just zoomed past.
The biking portion wasn't too difficult for me either. It was actually a good recovery point between running, since it's not very harsh on your knees or anything like that. And unless you're going full throttle, you're not really going to tire yourself up either. The bike does do some of the work there.
Nice. So how did the third part of the race go for everyone?
The third part of the race was that 3.1 mile jog. For me, it was, I guess, I wouldn't say brutal, but it was definitely, I could feel the muscles in my legs were really heavy after completing the swim and the biking. My quads could feel it too. Like I said, I've been training, I've been jogging on the treadmill. So I was excited for that portion, because I thought I would be able to jog more, but my body just wouldn't let me.
Well, yeah, it makes sense. If you're tired, let me think, what is it, like 12 and a half miles before running that you covered? Another thing I wanted to ask is, during the race, did you plan any refueling, or did you have any points where you're like, oh, I'm going to like get some water? I know that sometimes there's gel packs or like...
I had gel packs. Fuel. So before I did the running, I took some of the gel packs, and they had gummies there as well, so I took those as well just to refuel with some of my energy, and definitely had some water. They had water like on some of the stations, so when you were running a bit, I made sure to get some water at the rest stations when you ran by. I love all the cool signs that they had that said remember your why. One of the other ones I remember when I was walking by, because I was really in pain, was if a triathlon was easy, then everybody would do it.
I know what sign you're talking about. I did see that. Yeah, I like how they're trying to be inspirational and encouraging. It was definitely a very like high energy, like chaotic environment, but it was really fun and very positive, or at least for me, like as an onlooker, just walking around and watching people compete and talking to people that had family or friends competing.
I can't even remember how many times as I was running by somebody who was obviously ahead of me because they were running the opposite way. And they would be like, way to go, dude, keep it up. You're almost there. And then be like, I hope so. But it was awesome. Everybody there was so nice. And eventually I was like, why am I not telling people that? And whenever I'd pass somebody, or even they were coming the other way, I'd be like, hey, good job. And they'd be like, oh, thank you, man. And I'd be like, yeah, awesome, dude. Yeah, spread the love.
It was very interesting to watch racers cheering for each other. It was very positive. There's some competition, but even the really competitive, they almost looked professional, or like maybe semi-pro if they have that for triathlons. Yeah, everyone was cheering each other on for running. And I only saw part of the course. Was it mostly on cement, or was it an all-terrain course? Because for the most part, it looked like most of the course was on the road at Frenchman's Bar leading up to the dock or the beach.
I can't say for the swimming part what that looked like, but it was mostly all on a concrete trail as far as the running went. And then the biking was both on the trail and on the road, but it was not all terrain. All of it was paved, thankfully, and pretty flat. So not a lot of uphill inclines we had to deal with.
So Nawaba, do they have a schedule of when events are? And what events are you planning on participating in the future?
I think the schedule is maybe every first and last week of each month. I could be wrong, could be first and third, but I do plan on going to different events. I know there's some paddle boarding. I would like to go to some kayaking events, definitely jogs. I know it's all seasonal events as well. I would like to go up to the mountain and ski again, maybe try snowboarding.
So yeah, they try to put out a monthly schedule to let you know what events they're doing for that month. And for right now, it's mostly summer sports, obviously, because it's August when we're recording this. And I'm always happy to be on the water. So kayaking and paddleboarding, like Nick said, is definitely something I'm looking forward to. And since I didn't sign up with them until April, I'd missed out on all the winter sports. So I'm looking forward to try all of those, especially snowboarding, which is something I'm super interested in and it would be an awesome hobby to get into if I end up liking it.
Yeah, I think snowboarding is really fun. So you said they have skiing and snowboarding. Do you know if they have any other winter activities or are those the main ones?
I think they have, what is that thing called? Shoot. It looks like a tennis racket on your feet and they go hiking in the snow.
Oh, snowshoeing. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Let's see. I'm on the website right now and I'm trying to look for like the volunteer information for guides. And oh, that's actually something I wanted to ask about. So you had three different events. Did you have three different guides or did you have the same guide throughout the entire event?
For me, I had the same guy for all three events. I just personally think it makes things more convenient and easier.
Yeah, I would think so, because you might not have to, I guess, search through the crowd of people or bikes to find like the next person. So that can make sense. What about you, Miguel?
I had Megan, one of the directors from NWABA, do the swimming and running portion with me. And then I had a volunteer named Kevin who did the biking with me. So I had two guides throughout the race. Last year, I only had one. His name was Robert, and so he did the whole triathlon with me. It's much easier when it's just one person instead of more than one, because it can get really hectic. But it was still good. Still had fun.
Okay, and what about you, Elias?
I had one volunteer guide the entire time. It was nice. I didn't really have to worry about much. We didn't really leave each other's side, except for like the 1 minute I spent hopping into the porta potty because I drank a lot of water at the refill station.
Gosh.
Regretted that. But so yeah, it was nice just having the same person there. And ahead of the event itself, they try to partner us with our volunteers during some of the training for the event. And so we got to know them a bit better and they got to understand our levels of vision. It's just great. I loved every minute of it. And I definitely appreciate my guide a lot. He was super understanding. And I remember at one point he said, like, hey, you can bump into me all you want. He was like, I just don't want you falling. So he's like, don't stray too far from me. I was like, all right, you got it, dude. I'll knock you into the street. But like, yeah, he's a super nice guy.
Especially at the end of the running where like there's that turn. Because last year I had a really big fall on that turn. And so I was really nervous about it when running back into the park itself. But no, it was super fun. Megan and she, I was like, okay, Megan, I got this. I can do this. Even though I was like really bad in pain. Like I would like just give myself pep talks. Like while like speed walking. I did run like the last 40 meters of the race. But I was like, okay, I need to be realistic with myself after doing all that biking and the swimming part of how far I can take my body.
Yeah, let's see.
Did you guys like your medals?
I didn't really look at my medal. I just had it this morning. I just put it in my closet.
With your other medals?
Hang on.
Was it your medal closet? Like the closet that doesn't even have anything else, just like all your trophies and all your medals?
Well, it's more like one medal and a bunch of participation ribbons.
I think you should just tell people I have a medal closet.
Yeah.
And a trophy closet. There we go.
I'll just go looking for medals. I don't even do the race. I'll just buy them and hang them up.
Elias, where do you have your medal?
Mine's are in my drawer in my room. I'm going to find a place to put some of this stuff up because I have a couple from Dragon Boat races too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, cool. So I placed during this event. So I got two, but I still don't know what I placed. I don't know where to find that information, but I'm at least happy I did that. It just reminds me that I never quit. I just kept going.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's so cool that you placed into like the higher heats. That's really awesome. Mine are all behind me in my shoe rack that I have by the door. I have them hanging next to my keys and lanyards and all that stuff. So when anyone ever comes in, they can see them.
Nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. For listeners, the medals were round, and I believe they said Columbia River Triathlon on them.
We can get a picture of those on the website, too, so people can see them. Maybe we should all go and like, take a picture with our medals together.
I think that would be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I found out doing the triathlon last year, the person that I was running with me at the time, he was like, Miguel, once you do one triathlon, you want to do them every single time. You're going to get addicted. And he was right. Like, once you do one and you're like, I can do this. I'm in pain and like, I made it through. Like, I could totally get this done and complete these triathlons. And so, yeah, I'm excited for the next one.
Yeah, just being there, I'm like, wow, this looks fun. Definitely very exhausting, but yeah, it looks very fun. So I definitely want to try a triathlon now, but the swimming part. A question that I just thought of was, if you wanted to do another triathlon, could you ask NWABA to help you find a guide or find an event to participate?
We have one of our members from NWABA that she does a lot other triathlons and stuff, but I mean, she knows people like in the field that she has asked to guide her. That's a good place to start, is to go ask NWABA, see if they know anybody that would, but I personally don't know the answer to that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they would. I would definitely ask, but I guess I don't, just because with the different triathlons and all that, I don't got the means to travel to get there. There's not always going to be a guide that lives within my area of town that can make it happen to where we both go. So it would just be a difficulty for me to get to other events if it's not just with the organization. But they definitely can find you guides in different events. You just got to find a ride there.
Yeah, I'm curious to know if they would even provide like a tandem bike, since that's not something most people would have. I wonder if they would loan one of those out. It's like the main thing, because finding a guide is, you can actually probably do that on your own as far as running and even swimming goes, but I don't think most people have tandem bikes. So that would be something I'd be super interested to ask them about.
And I don't know about you guys, but with us doing Dragon Boat practice and races as well, that's like time consuming as well, and trying to like figure out other times to do things. It's interesting, but I enjoy all of it. It's so much fun.
Yeah, that's true. And it looks like online, so there's the paddleboard clinics coming up, and then they have some hiking kayak clinics in like end of September, except I don't know where Woodland, Washington is. Oh, and then I guess they also have some bike rides in Springfield. So that's cool that they're like going all over the place.
I'm definitely probably going to go to that hike. I love hiking. Like, I could hike for hours and not realize how tired I am until I'm in the car coming back home. So much fun.
Yeah, hiking is fun. And yeah, I agree with you. Like, hiking for me, definitely, I don't get tired until like way later.
And so, Elias, I always tease Coach that he should run a triathlon with me. He just starts laughing.
Oh, for the dragon boat races?
Yeah. He's Larry all the time.
Like, okay. Hey, Larry,
when are we going to go? When are you going to go up and try with me?
That is funny. So I guess with the, and I'm trying to get like a picture of what, hang on. Let's see, I guess with like the dragon boat races, or I guess dragon boat practices. So I'm guessing that's weekly for you, correct?
Yeah, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays.
Do they have team training days, or obviously like they do, but like, do they divide their practices, I guess, with like, this is going to be a boat day, or this is going to be like maybe a weightlifting day or something like that? Like, so you have like cross training?
No, they don't.
Nope.
They should. Okay. That would be cool.
Okay.
Or just in the boat.
Just in the boat. Okay.
Yeah. They do encourage us to go and stay active outside of even just practices too, though. Like, I haven't been able to make it to a couple of the practices just because of work, and I try not to slack too much. Obviously, I can't go out on the water by myself, but I try to maintain some level of like weightlifting and cardio.
Same for me here. It's like, I try to like make as much practice as I can, but also working in Vancouver on Tuesdays, it's really hard because I get out of work like at 5:30. So it's like, I'm not making it across town in 10 minutes. There's no way.
Yeah, that's definitely rough. And then you have to go through traffic too. And getting over like either, I don't know if you take the I-5 bridge or like the 205 bridge, and everybody's just trying
it's
to
all
like
backed
leave.
Up by that point. It's like traffic nightmares.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's on the bus, Elias. I don't know if you've ever done the commute in
The mornings are great. The afternoons, I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not even going to try.
Yeah, the commute in, it's not the worst, but still, it's quite a distance to travel, so I wouldn't count on even 20 minutes sometimes. So.
No. Are you guys excited for the Portland races?
Yeah, I am. I'm going to see tomorrow morning if missing these practices really made that much of an effect on me, which I'm hoping not. It might take me a little bit to get back in a rhythm, but...
We did the biggest yesterday was like two powers of 10s. It was not bad.
All right.
It's good to take like breaks too, because I know that like after like doing a week or two of high intensity or like high weight, having like a rest week, you can, I don't know, recover and then like you get stronger, if that makes sense. It's like the recovery week. Like, I don't know how much like weightlifting or training y'all have done, but there's like... Yeah, that's like a whole thing in itself. And also like leading up to competitions, like if you like ease back on your training load, then you'll be like...
Rock stars.
Yeah, you'll be rock stars. You'll be unstoppable. Yeah.
No, definitely. I agree with that though. So I was telling one of the guys last night that hopefully they're not going to have us doing a whole bunch right before the race, because usually you would want to go hard way before the race, and the race just like a week or two before the race, just light practices before people get hurt.
Yeah, and I definitely was gonna look into doing dragon boat racing too, because it looks so cool. But also
you can join Vern.
Okay, wait, hang on.
Why can't you join ours? You can join.
I don't know if they want sighted people. Do they want sighted people?
No, they do. Yeah, anyone.
Okay, hold on. Let me look up the Dragon Boats Portland. Okay.
VIP is open to everybody.
Sighted. VIP? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, VIP. Just because...
Who was saying it wasn't open to everybody? Was that one of the guys that was crybabying about not having enough sighted people?
Yeah, some idiot that doesn't know shit.
Oh, hey, wait. Wow, okay. I was not expecting this website to have this many teams. Hold on. Amazon Dragons Paddling Club. Is this like Amazon, like the company?
No.
Maybe not. Okay.
No. It's actually an all-women's team.
Okay.
No, it is the company. I thought they were from the Amazon, but they're from the company.
Yeah, I don't know if it's it doesn't say like Amazon with like the... Hang on. Okay. It doesn't say like the Amazon or have like the Amazon like logo. So maybe they are just naming it after like the river.
Probably the river. I wouldn't assume. I don't know.
Okay. Well, let's see. Okay. Next one. Castaways. Dragon Fuel. Nice. Dragon Sprites. Okay. Fire Breathing Blowfish. Okay. Golden Dragons. Dragonflies. That's a good name. Okay, great. Wait, and you called it, or wait, what was it called?
VIP, which is visually impaired paddlers, but it is open to everyone. Okay. They want us to recruit as many people as we can, just because our numbers tend to dwindle a little bit, because it's hard to recruit people who are visually impaired, just because not everybody's into this kind of stuff, but even less so when you have that barrier.
I think it would be fun to like catch the flag or be like a drummer.
You should totally be on our team and tell them you want to be our drummer, because we don't have one.
Yeah, we don't. I have a friend who's a drummer, and I'll ask if they want to do drumming on boats.
Jenna, one of our team members yesterday was like, Miguel, we can be on the Olympics USA for dragon boat racing. And like, one day.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. Yeah, I think Randy, was it Randy? Randy or Larry was like, yeah, we have someone who went to Thailand.
The crybaby, yeah.
What?
He went to the USA team, the Paralympic team.
Oh, Wasabi was the other one, right?
Wasabi is the paddling club that we're underneath, and then the teams all have their little names that I cannot remember right now.
Oh, I guess they have like a triad team, guest paddlers. Right now I'm just like, this looks fun, I want to do this, but I have to be a little bit like more realistic, because I'm like, okay, like travel time, gotta work too.
Yeah.
Gotta take some time off to rest.
You don't want to burn yourself out.
Yeah, I know. So let's see. I'm definitely like interested in volunteering for helping snowboard and also stand up paddleboard. I don't own a kayak, so Do you know if guides have to like bring their own equipment, or does Baba have like their own?
They have all their own equipment.
All right. Well, thank you so much for interviewing with us.
And thank you too, Michelle. As a reminder, you're listening to Portland Community College's Let's Talk, a podcast about disability culture on KBOO 90.7 FM. And now over to Asher with an interview from Anna Stamach.
Welcome to this Let's Talk podcast. My name is Asher, and today I have the pleasure of interviewing my good friend, Anna Stamach. We'll be talking about her job as an environmental educator and what she does to educate the next generation on the environment.
Thank you for joining me today. Can you tell me who you are, what your name is, and what your pronouns are?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Anna, she, her. My official title is Environmental Education Instructor and Director. That's kind of a mouthful, but just day to day, I mostly just lead activities and games in our 222-acre nature park to help our K-6 kids get outside and they get involved with local ecology. So I basically am just a glorified nature summer camp counselor. I think that's the easiest way to describe what I do. And I think that's the correct vision that you'll have in your head when I say that.
That's awesome. What is your organization called and what's their mission statement?
Yeah, so I work for THPRD, which is Tualatin Hills Parks and Recreation District. We were formed in 1955, and our mission is to provide high-quality park and recreation facilities, programs, services, and natural areas that meet the needs of the diverse communities that we serve. I thought this was kind of fitting. We also have our own equity, inclusion, and belonging statement. I'll rattle off that as well. THPRD's goal is to serve every individual with dignity, fairness, and respect. We're dedicated and hold ourselves accountable to being a welcoming and inclusive organization that lives our values by advancing equity, inclusion, fairness, belonging, and respect for all. As stewards of public lands and spaces, we're committed to keeping those spaces safe, accessible, and bringing people together.
Awesome. That's so cool. How do you or the organization you work with support kids with disabilities while they're out exploring and discovering nature?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways. When I was trying to develop how did I want to answer this question, I kind of started to go to certain disabilities that we see the most in my camps. But as I was trying to do that, I noticed that just as disabilities are unique to the person who has one, so are the ways that I and my team assist someone with those disabilities. So I'll just share a few. But seriously, there's so many different tools and strategies that we use both outside and inside our education spaces in order to help students get involved. I'd say that the largest way that we accommodate the needs of our kids with disabilities, though, is through our inclusion aid program. So students with a documented disability, this is free for their family. They get a staff member whose like sole job is just to make sure that they're able to engage in programs and have their needs met. I, as an instructor and director, work really closely with that person to make sure that we can come up with a plan together to suggest modifications to an activity, or sometimes the aid is there in order just to give that student some space to be away from the group. If they have a lot of sensory overload from being in the group, it can be kind of loud sometimes. Working with kids, that happens. If it does get louder, then that person is also there in order to create a quiet space for them. Another like really common tool that we use with our kiddos is using like fidgets. They're just like little toys. If you don't know what it is, they're just little toys that are really satisfying to hold for one reason or another. And they help kids who have excess energy at the moment release it. I like to use this while I'm doing a lot of verbal explaining to the kids. Sometimes when we're outside, I don't have all the tools that you have in a classroom. Right? So I often will give more verbal directions as well as a couple of visual aids that I can bring with me. if I'm describing something and that student has a hard time, then I will give them a fidget, which is just like a little something for them to hold so that they can focus, or rather release some of that excess energy that they may have. We're mostly using those for kids who have ADHD or on the autism spectrum. Sometimes my fidgets that I use are not also always ones that you can buy on Amazon. Sometimes they're just nature fidgets. Actually, I'll challenge you. So next time that y'all are outside in a natural area, try and find something that's just satisfying to hold that's on the ground. You'll find that there's sticks that are covered in really loose bark or really loose moss, and it's really fun to like peel it off. So that's a fidget, right? So we do a lot of that.
Love that. That's awesome. As someone who has ADHD myself as well, I love to fidget with things.
Yeah, right? They're great.
Fidget with wires and hair ties and whatnot. But that's really cool that there's just things in nature you can fidget with, even if you don't have a fidget toy. So the students or the kids that you support in your organization, do you mostly see kids with ADHD and kids with autism, or do you also see other children with other disabilities as well?
Those are our main ones. Yeah. So we follow the standard outlook, I guess, of what kind of disabilities that you see, like just in classrooms in general, we look about the same. So most of them are ADHD or autism spectrum. We have had some students in the past who are hard of hearing, and they often come with their own tools from home, as well as we do some things in the classroom, writing down instructions for those students so that it's easier. If I can't be loud enough in order for them to hear, then I'll often do written instructions as well.
That's great. Yeah. I remember our conversation, we talked before that there was a blind student at one point. Talk about it a little bit more to our listeners as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that was with another organization that I worked for. That was with Northwest Outdoor Science School. But yes, we did have a blind student, and I had to do a lot of language changes. So we had like an attention getter that was 1, 2, 3, eyes on me. And then the students would say back, 1, 2, eyes on you. So I had to change that. I was like, not everybody can put their eyes on me, right? I had to change it. And I changed it to 1, 2, 3, ears on me. A lot of my inclusion tools that I have, I often switch and swap based on what I need for the group that I'm with, as we all should, right? There was also some activities where writing for him would look a whole lot different. And so I worked really closely with his aide in order to make sure that he was able to participate. I have found, though, that nature, like what we're talking about, is like super inclusive. There's so many sensory things that you can manipulate and like ways to explore with all five of your senses. That was something that was really huge at outdoor school where I had that blind student. It was really sweet. I was talking about a salamander at one point, like we found one on the trail. He was super interested in it, and he was coming up closer, and I could tell he was like moving towards me and trying to get close to it. And I said, do you want to hold it? And so he holds out his hand and put it, and he goes, oh no, I don't. Change my mind. No, get rid of the salamander. But that was a really fun learning experience. He could experience it with his hand.
I've never touched a salamander before, and I don't hope to at least or encounter one. But yeah, that sounds really interesting. Interesting. With that, what do you love about your job? And I know you talked a little bit about going from the Northwest organization to going to the one that you're working in now. Also, just tell us about that transition and everything.
Yeah, for sure. So I have worked with THPRD for a while. This is where I currently work, off and on. But then for the whole last year, I was with Northwest Outdoor Science School. They do very similar programming, but with THPRD, I do a lot more like summer camp stuff. It just basically changes, am I teaching mostly, or am I trying to help you have fun? So with my current organization, I'm mostly doing recreational type activities, where with outdoor school, I was doing mostly educational. I love both of them. I think the part that I love the most about THPRD, though, well, I guess in both, honestly, this happens in both. But I think I just really, really love those moments where someone is like transfixed on something that we find in nature, kind of like that salamander thing I just mentioned with our blind student. Sometimes we'll find like a frog, or we'll find a really, really cool plant, and we just sit there and we're just like staring at it and holding it. And sometimes you can smell it if you want to. That's a great way to explore too. And we just marvel. I think that often transcends many of the barriers that you might see to inclusion, because we can all engage in those ways. Just in those moments, we're developing an appreciation and a desire to understand and engage with the subject, whatever that is. And that's the bedrock for learning. You have to be motivated or at least curious enough to start investigating to learn. So once I have them engaged with whatever we're looking at, there's like so much that we can do to just further their understanding. I really, really enjoy taking that step from, wow, what is that thing? To like, well, let's find out. Like, let's explore, let's ask the right questions. So yeah, I just really like teaching.
I love that. That's so cool. Why is it important to protect the environment? You've been explaining as well of being able to explore and being able to engage out in nature, and that helps kiddos to even learn more, I feel like, as well, regardless of whether they have disabilities or not.
Yeah, absolutely. The environment, it's so broad. I have like a short answer. You should protect the environment because you live in it and you depend on it. Short answer. But longer answer, and I could talk about this for a long time.
Go for it. This is your stage.
Our environment includes many components that offer us what we call ecosystem services. I have a lot of articles about that as well. So like ecosystem services, it's defined as the benefits that people get from healthy ecosystems for free, both monetarily and with labor. So we don't have to work for it and we don't have to pay for it. So for example, we don't have to pay anyone to clean our air. Right? That just happens. We don't have to pollinate every blueberry flower because the bees are doing it for us. And we don't have to refill the aquifers because ground and time does that for us. But when we don't have a healthy environment, those things start to break down. So the air actually does become unclean because we have pollution. We start losing the ecosystem services. And then because of that, we have to start replacing them ourselves. You often do those in ways that don't work very well, or at least it's not very efficient. A good example of this would be like on the Upper Mississippi River Basin, there was a lot of levees. So the levees would keep floodwaters at bay. Those are made by people. But the levees began failing and they were causing massive flood damage in the area that created millions of dollars of damage, essentially. So this all happened because people were draining the wetlands. They removed the excess water, or they stored it rather in those wetlands. Because they drained those for agriculture or whatever means that they had, buildings, stuff like that. Then they had to come up with ways, expensive ways, in order to replace that ecosystem service. And it didn't work even. So those man-made solutions to ecosystem services don't always alleviate the problem. Sometimes they do, but again, they're much more labor and cost intensive. I think if I summarize that, it would be that the environment is important because it cares for you. There's often things that you don't think about, but day to day, you rely on these things. So caring for the environment, it doesn't just help the environment, it also helps you in a roundabout way.
What is a levee? What is that? I've not heard of that before.
It's often made of cement wall, basically.
Oh, is it like a dam kind of thing?
It's very similar to a dam. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It just doesn't produce power.
It's just there.
Yeah. It's just a giant like cement block. They use it in order to remove floods, like do a water break or something.
Well, I guess it didn't work.
No, it didn't.
It flooded.
It did not. No.
Oops. Yeah. Do you have any fun, interesting stories about your adventures and escapades and out in nature with these kiddos? I'm sure you have plenty.
Yeah, lots, actually. One that like immediately stands out. So I was working with a pair of identical twins in a nature camp that I was running, and they both were on the autism spectrum. They would often get really, really overstimulated, and then they would run outside of the program area. And that's a safety concern. So I was asking my coworkers about it, what should we do to help them engage, asking mom and dad, what are some ways that we can get them both not being overstimulated? And when they do become overstimulated, how do we keep them from running outside the classroom? I originally tried really hard to just keep the other campers quiet, like don't slam the tables, we're to try and be as quiet as possible, just like a very chill environment. But they were first to third grade. So that's kind of difficult for their age. So it wasn't working as well as I had hoped. And our campers were still not being successful as I knew that they could be in that camp. So we ended up kind of brainstorming together, me and my coworkers, and they said, what if you use headphones? And I was like, really? I didn't think about that. Instead of making the environment quieter, why don't we make it quieter for them? I thought it was brilliant. So we got matching headphones for them. So we put that on them and they used that tool throughout the rest of the week that they were with us. Towards the end of the week, they started using them like themselves. They would recognize when things were getting louder and they were getting more dysregulated. So I was really happy that that tool worked well for them. And then it became like a way for them to like more easily engage. They started opening up more and like being more willing to hang out with other students and engage socially. So I would call that a win. That's one of my favorite stories when I think about inclusion in camps and something that was like a real big win for them and us.
Oh, I love that. That's so cool. I would love to invest in some noise-canceling headphones. I feel like those are very much helpful. I feel like in a lot of situations where it's just really loud, whether it's in a classroom setting or whether it's outside, it's just noises. I don't know how it works, but it just gets so overwhelming at some
point. Oh, for sure. Yeah, right? Oh my gosh, noisy environments. Do you remember being in like a gym in high school or something?
Everything's like, echoing and everything's just going around.
Exactly, right? There's like a lot of things going around in front of you, a lot of visual stimulus. I think when we tune down one sense, then that's easier for us to not get overstimulated. When there's a lot of visual input and there's a lot of auditorial and maybe also like something that's touching us weirdly, overwhelming. So I've noticed especially with our students on the autism spectrum, that they're increasing some satisfying or like enjoyable sensory experience while decreasing other sensory experiences or other stimulus that they don't like. That can be different for each of our students. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Have you guys ever just tried going out into, well, I don't know if there's any woods, forest in Oregon, and just standing and just listening to what's going on outside and letting that silence just like, huh, kind of thing. I feel like that's just so peaceful.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm happy that you're bringing that up. We call that a sit spot.
I love that. There's a name for it.
Yeah, there is. It's a sit spot. You see that in a lot of really popular outdoor curriculum. It's called Beatles. That's basically like the outdoor educator's Bible. We love taking students out into nature because nature is super regulating, like in and of itself. We had a student who was not diagnosed with any sort of disability, but he often had a hard time spending time with the group. He would easily get overstimulated in the camp environment. And so we would take walks with him. And while we were on those walks, we would do a sit spot. So we'd sit down and then we'd just start counting, like, what are five things that you see? And like, what are four things that you can feel with your hands or like with your legs? What are your feet touching right now? Can you feel the grass? Just taking the time to ground him. And that often helped him to regulate enough in order to join the group.
I love that. I've always wanted to do that, honestly, to just lose myself into a forest or woods, minus the mosquitoes, and just stand.
Yeah.
And just stand there and just listen and just be, because just the busyness of everyday life, even not being in school anymore and working right now, it's just too loud. Everything is just too loud. And I'm just like, all right, just stop. Everything stop.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Your blood pressure actually does decrease like when you're in natural environments. Yeah. I think we need to get more people outside. I'm also definitely speaking from a biased place, but everybody should get outside more. Just spend time taking it in. Also at the Nature Center have forest bathing for adults, which is exactly what you just described. Like you just go out with someone as a group and then they help guide you in how to relax in the forest, how to just enjoy it and take in your surroundings, as well as just to let go of maybe some of the things that you're stressed out about or things that are in life that are like weighing you down.
I'm going to have to ask more details about that from you. That sounds like something I would love to do.
Oh yeah. Forest bathing is so much fun. Yeah.
When you said forest bathing, I was like, are we literally going to the forest to take a bath? Like, and I'm like, oh wait, no, that's not what you mean.
However, I think like a bath out in the middle of the forest does sound really good. Like,
what kind of health benefits do you gain just from being outdoors a little bit more?
There's a lot. I think major ones is just decreasing stress So people will often describe that like being out in nature, especially for the occasional and the rare adult programs that we do, adults will often describe nature as a place that they feel safe, that they feel calm in. It's much quieter. Noise pollution is a huge thing. We're kind of talking about that already. If you're in an environment long enough that's very, very loud, for people who live in cities versus live in rural areas, you do actually see an increase in heart issues for those individuals. I'm happy to share more details on that. During my studies at PSU, we talked a lot about that in one of our classes, about the effects of too much noise on the body, and that like quiet spaces are very important, and often large natural areas give you the opportunity to experience some of that quiet.
Yeah. Going back to your organization, what are they up to right now? Or what are you up to right now? We'll ask that.
Yeah, well, right now we're gearing up for our fall programs. We have lots of activities. We publish a guide every single season. So we have new stuff going on in the fall. We have new stuff in the winter, spring, summer. So right now, our activity guide, we have a lot of activities that focus around adaptive and inclusive recreation. So for your listeners, I would point them to there. We have services like adult and child therapeutic classes. Those ones are often art-based, or they're social-emotional learning. That's specifically created around adults and children who have disabilities. We also have wheelchair basketball, and we have that in multiple facilities. So if you're interested, that's really, really fun. I've watched a couple of games before, and it gets pretty intense out there.
I bet.
They have a fun time. We also have seated exercise. We even have, it's called the Rec-mobile. Basically, most of the time during the summer, they are traveling to different parks and they're doing different games and activities in different parks that are in the Tualatin Valley area. But they also do adaptive gardening. They specifically have a garden that you can come to and that you can do some gardening with them. They have tools that are formulated for people who might have physical disabilities. They're very aware of the different needs of our community as well, and making that an inclusive space.
Where is this garden at? I don't have a green thumb at all, but I would love to try to get one.
Yeah, we have like a couple of garden plots. There's three or four of them, and I'll send you the specific one that they're at.
Oh, yeah, of course. I will also share it with our listeners, too. So this Rec-mobile goes around, and it has these activities that, like, whenever they park at a park, I guess, and then they go out and they provide these recreational activities. Is that what this is? Or
Basically, I mean, you've said it really well. Basically, they show up with this really big van, and there's 2 to 3 staff there, and they go to different parks that are within our district. They'll stay there for max 6 hours, but most of the time it's about 3 to 4. But whoever is enjoying the park, they are welcome to participate in the activities we bring. I know for the Nature Center, we have the Nature Mobile, so it's very similar to the Rec-mobile. But we focus on nature. It's the Nature Mobile. You'll see us. We're like a bright green truck. It's really hard to miss. We just bring nature materials that people can interact with of all ages. We have skulls and pelts, so you can kind of explore natural materials that we bring. We also have a theme whenever we come. So like, we might talk about birds, and then we'll do a craft where you can make a bird. They're all supposed to be educational as well. All of our activities are very sensory, so we can be the most inclusive.
So all these mobiles, are they based around Tualatin, or do they go around other places as well?
Yeah, they stay within our district. So Tualatin Hills, Parks and Rec. So imagine the center of Beaverton, wherever you think that is, and then just expand out until you hit Portland and Hillsboro. And that's kind of where we stick, because Hillsboro and Portland have their own parks department. So we just serve the people in our community that are within that, like Beaverton. I think we go all the way up to Bethany. So that's for like our northern area. And then our southern is just before you hit Tigard.
Oh, wow. I wish I could have gone to stuff like, because that was where I was living before I moved all the way up north.
Yeah. Well, now you have Portland, right? And Portland Park and Rec.
Well, I would still try to make a trip down there and see if I could like catch one of your mobiles, whether it's the nature one or
the rec one.
Oh, yeah, for sure. What does the Rec-mobile look like? I know you said the Nature Mobile is green. What does the Rec-mobile look like?
They're white and it has our logo like all over it. Yeah. So just like THPRD. And I think there's pictures of kids running around on a basketball court as well. It's just very rec based versus ours is like green nature.
Awesome. So what are some resources for listeners who are interested in enjoying the outdoors here in Portland?
Yeah, like so many. I think it depends on how much nature you want to experience and to what extremity. So I think for those people who are more interested in not very extreme and not too much nature, we don't want to be roughing it, then I would suggest parks. We have a lot. We also have a lot of adaptive equipment parks. So those are parks who specifically have materials and tools that you can use and equipment that is made for people who have physical or developmental disabilities. There's many in the area that I'm in. We have a park. It's called Jenkins Estate. We have a park on the northern end of that, which is where Camp Rivendale happens, which is an inclusive and adaptive summer camp that happens every year that is just made for those with physical or developmental disabilities. We have a park there that is very inclusive. So it has like soft mats. They have a wheelchair swing. So I would suggest Portland Parks and Rec and Hillsborough Parks and Rec has that as well. So wherever you are, you can find adaptive equipment parks. For those who want a little bit more extremity, but again, not too much nature, then I would suggest that you look into summer camps that are in Oregon. There's a website, it's called verispecialcamps.com, and they have special needs summer camps, a list of them, all the way from like those with developmental disabilities to those with spinal cord injuries. Then for those who want high extremity and then bunch of nature, I would suggest outdoor recreation, like guided experiences. There's a group in Forest Grove, it's called Adventure Without Limits. They do outdoor recreational activities that include kayaking, rock climbing, rafting, hiking, and these are all made to fit whatever disability that you come to them with. So they're happy to make custom trips for a weekend or a week, have adaptive tools and adaptive equipment to make sure that you're able to do that. There are other people who like to get out, kind of want a lot of nature, you know.
Go hard or go home.
Exactly. Those people, there's lots of self-guided outdoor recreation. This was a recent initiative that Metro did. It's called accesstrails.org, and they created this entire site to explain to people the different trails in Portland, what people with disabilities can learn more about that trail and decide whether or not it's a good fit for them. So they have a map on their website, and they have a list of if you experience this disability, then we would suggest this trail for you. There's also disabledhikers.com, and they have trail guides for all of Oregon. So not just Portland. Accesstrails.org has more information for just our Portland metro area. But then if you really want to get out there and you want to take a trip somewhere in Oregon, then you can find it on there. They also have articles, hereisoregon.com, on how to get beach wheelchairs, because I know that that's a hard place to access for many wheelchair users. So there are free rentable beach wheelchairs that you can get at many Oregon state cities.
Beach wheelchairs.
Yeah. What?
Are they able to just like cruise along sand or something? Are they like four-wheel drive? Or
yeah. Well, from what I can tell, I'm not an engineer, but they have like these wheels that look very bubbly. Oh. Instead of your normal wheelchair is like very thin, these ones are very thick. So then you don't sink into the sand.
That's really cool. They have like a little remote, I guess, on the wheelchair itself to move it around. Or for the user to move it around, or does someone need to like push it?
I think they're both. So you can either get like motorized or you can get like a non-motorized and like someone pushes you.
That's really cool. Beach wheelchair.
Beach wheelchair. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody likes the beach.
I've not been to the beach that much often, but yeah, I feel like that's very useful to have, especially for those who have mobility issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Anna, for talking to us today about what you do and how much you're helping kiddos, especially those with disabilities or those on the autism spectrum or on the spectrum in general, to get out in nature, to explore, and to learn more. We really appreciate you. Do you have anything else to tell our listeners, whether it's about what you do or about nature or to protect the environment more?
Yeah, I think I would just say get outside, smell some grass, find a nature fidget. Okay, that's what I'd leave you with.
Well, to end off, what's your favorite nature fidget?
My favorite nature fidget? A smooth rock, okay? Because you put it in your pocket and it gets like warm from your body heat and then you just have a little smooth rock.
I'm going to have to try that one day.
Yeah.
Thanks, Anna. Thank you so much. Appreciate you for coming on today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Let's Talk, Portland Community College's broadcast about disability culture. Find more information and resources concerning this episode and others at pcc.edu/DCA. This episode was produced by the Let's Talk Podcast Collective as a collaborative effort between students, the Accessible Education and Disability Resource Department, and the PCC Multimedia Department. We air new episodes on our home website, our Spotify channel, and Cable Radio 90.7 FM.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Tune in to us the first Friday of next month at 11 a.m. to catch another Let's Talk Live, right here on KBOO FM.
To KBOO, Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Far West, presenting their annual folk music conference in Vancouver, Washington, October 9th through 12th. Tickets and info at far-west.org.